Hi, I'm Carl Littke, Wisconsin State Chapter of the National Wild Turkey Federation. Another great hour of living the outdoors is now on WSCO.
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs. It's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druitt, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druitt.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druitt. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. Hey, if you want to chime in at all during tonight's broadcast, give us a call at 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. You can also follow me on Instagram. It's Outdoors Living The, and you can email me as well at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. Well, here we are. Opening up the month of February, and spring is not all that far off. And from my perspective, it's been a relatively mild winter. We've got enough cold weather to get enough ice for the ice fishermen and the sturgeon spears to be out there and participate. A lot of other winter sports going on out there as well: snowmobiling, snowshoeing, and cross country skiing, all that kind of fun stuff. But a few weeks ago, I received an email and requested that I had somebody interested in wanting to get involved in trapping. And I immediately thought of tonight's guest, who's been on the show multiple times to talk about trapping. And this is one of his passions. And I'm welcoming in Jim Bender. Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. You hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. How about you? Can you hear me?
Oh, loud and clear, big man. I'm doing real well. It's been a weird winter. Trapping has been interesting. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but it's been a good winter. I've been across the board with multiple species, and it's been a lot of fun.
Excellent. That's great news. How about yourself? It's been quite a while since you and I have sat down and chatted. How are you doing otherwise?
Well, not if I give you the list of ailments, I'm going to sound like that old man that nobody ever asks how he's doing because he stops and tells you. Well,
right.
I had some shoulder surgery, I had some heart surgery, I had some hand surgery. I've been in and out of the hospital, but quite honestly, playing the cards I was dealt, I'm doing pretty darn well. Trapping trip to Missouri. And we'll talk about that a little bit. And 3 days into it, I got COVID. And I'm here to tell you, even though I was vaccinated, and we're not going to discuss vaccine, yes or no, I was vaccinated, I got it, and it was miserable. And there ended my bobcat trip to Missouri.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, yeah. This COVID thing has been such an interruption on everyone's life, even those of us who enjoy the outdoors. And I'll tell you what, there's a few worse things, but nothing quite like being sick when you got a hunting trip planned or a fishing trip planned,
yeah,
or something like that. It's, you wait all year or many years before you get a chance to do that. And then all of a sudden some virus has got to take that all away from you. So I kind of feel,
yeah,
your frustration, and that's not fun at all.
Well, The bad news is I got COVID. The good news is I survived it. And we got down there on Saturday, my trapping partner and I. We got traps set Sunday and Monday. Monday morning, I already had a bobcat and a handful of coon. And Tuesday, he started feeling sick. Wednesday morning, he couldn't answer the bell. I went and pulled. We had 48 traps out by that time for coyote and bobcat. And I pulled the traps. And I was home by Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I started feeling it. By Saturday, it was full blown. By Monday, I was back on my feet and chopping wood again.
Wow. That's the thing about that is that, it affects everybody so differently. And
mm-hmm.
But I'm glad to hear that you're doing better. And wow, that's a lot of things to go on. But, when you get to be up there in age a little bit, the ailments seem to increase and things take a little bit longer to heal, but you know what? That doesn't stop us, Jim, does it? We just keep on trudging on.
You know, Mark, I had a haircut this morning, and I thought, I was looking at the hair on the floor thinking, who was the old guy who got his hair cut? you know, left all that gray down there. And then I looked in the mirror and realized it was I.
I know. I always joke with my, with the woman who cuts my hair, and it looks like it snowed in the salon after I'm done in there. It's like, there isn't one brown hair in there. It's all white. And it's like, oh my God, this is just, I might as well just shave my head and be done with it, you know?
Oh boy, I have a feeling that would be largely misshapen, Mark.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what I'd look like. I got on Snapchat once and used one of their filters to say what I would look like without any hair. And I think I kind of scared. I may have wet myself. I scared myself so bad. I don't know. It's kind of frightening, but it's been a, just kind of one of those, you know, weird oddball years, a lot of weird things going on. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, trapping in Missouri, Jim, is that something you have to do by permit? Is that something that you can get over the counter? How does that work in other states?
It depends on the states. There's a lot of states with reciprocity, especially if you go out Wyoming, Montana, things like that. If they can trap here in Wisconsin, we can trap there. Whatever they can trap here, we can trap there. So if I went to Wyoming, I believe I'd be allowed one bobcat, whereas Wyoming trappers, bobcats are like raccoons around here. You know, you're welcome as many as you want. But the reciprocity in Wisconsin, if you get a tag, you can only get one, which is about, every 2-3 years, depending on where you're trapping. Now, Minnesota does not allow non-resident trappers at all. Michigan is pretty friendly. There's reciprocity there. Illinois, Missouri, it's over the counter. Now, there were some animals like that bobcat. There is international agreement that cats and otters will not be transported without what's called a CITES tag. And so I had to leave my cat down there because I had to exit early. Called the DNR, left all my information. They were very understanding. They tagged it for me. And actually, the person that I was staying with trapping brought it up last weekend. And our friend Randy Williams had asked me as a special favor if I caught one to skin it so he could mount it. So when Randy gets back from Arizona, he's going to be mounting it.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah. Hey. So I'm just going to give it to him. But he's old anyway, Mark. I'm going to tell him he's got to put in his will when he dies, which, you know, 2-3 years, he's 70. So I get it back.
Perfect. Perfect.
And so, I know he's listening, and that's why I'm jabbing at him.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
Exactly.
So with those bobcat, now in Wisconsin, obviously it takes you several years to get a tag down there. It's just like over the counter and you got a place to go.
It's like trapping coyotes up here. A little bit easier than trapping coyotes up here. But, you buy the license. It's a $190 license. The bobcat are not protected like they are in Wisconsin. By the way, I did have a Wisconsin tag, and I did get a Wisconsin cat. So I actually got two cats this year. I was hoping to get quite a few more down in Missouri, and I was in a good area. But, obviously, I had to come home early.
Right. So with the bobcat permits, is that you can either trap them or hunt them? Is that correct, Jim? Is that how that works?
Yes. You can. There's several different ways you can get them. Spot and stalk bobcat does not work. I'm in the woods all the time, and I think I've seen three bobcats that were not being chased by dogs or in a trap my whole life. In Wisconsin here, you can trap them. You can call them in, and I have successfully called in bobcats when I was hunting coyotes. In fact, this spring, turkey hunting, I called one into my lap, and he was in my lap before I saw him, and it was a nice cat. And then you can also run them with dogs. So there's three different ways. The dog one is probably, in my estimation, and I did shoot a bobcat behind dogs once, it's feast or famine. Either you let the dogs loose on a track and the cat goes up a tree, or in my case, the cat lines out for a big, big, big swamp and he circles and circles and circles and circles. And you finally get a shot at him. But sometimes they just plain go up a tree to get away from the dogs. It just depends on the cat. Kind of like bear hunting, Mark. You know, sometimes the bear lights out and sometimes he sets up, you know.
Right, right, exactly. And in Wisconsin, that's on a draw system as well, correct?
Yes. Now, there's two seasons, the first season, the second season. The first one ends, I think, December 1st. I wouldn't, don't quote me on that. But
sure.
For us trappers, that first season is a little better. If you're a dog hunter or a caller, second season is better. The problem with trapping second season, obviously you've got the changing weather conditions and things like that. Bobcats are not particularly hard to trap, so don't think I'm some sort of genius. But trapping the second season is a little harder, and in my opinion, it's because deer season is over. There's gut piles. There's people dumping bones on the environment. You know, on my farm here, when we harvest a deer, after we cut it up, all the parts that we don't eat gets dumped out on the environment and the farm here. And there might be a wounded deer or two, or a deer that wasn't recovered. Well, that all becomes bobcat food, and it makes them a lot tougher to trap after gun season.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that makes sense. There's a lot more food sources available out there, I would take it.
Yes, yes. And I think there's also some weaker animals out there, and I think that just lends itself into the more food sources.
Right, right. And you said you how many years did it take you to get a tag, Jim?
This tag, it only took me three. Because I went the zone down here, Wapaka County, and I took first season, which, you know, not a lot of people want that. I got a beautiful spotted cat. It's cats in Wisconsin are generally rusty. They've got a brown, reddish brown color to them. Mine had a slate gray. If it was out west, we'd have called it blue, and it had spots all the way up its side. It was real pretty, and that's going into my private fur collection. Actually, wow. The one I caught in Missouri was rusty and looked more like a Wisconsin cat than the one I caught did.
Oh, that's very cool. And I mean, bobcats to me are a very secretive animal. And like you mentioned earlier, it's not like you can just go out and look for them. They're, you know, I've gotten them on my cameras when I have my property plenty of times, but all the hours that I spent sitting in a tree stand on that property, not once did I see a bobcat. As a matter of fact, right. When I was down in Iowa a couple of weeks ago was the second time only that I've ever seen a bobcat in the wild. The other one was up in northern Wisconsin crossing a logging trail. But this right. one that I saw down in Iowa was really quite big, and it was beautiful. And it was just kind of cool to see one of those things.
Yeah, and it is by no means routine to see bobcats. You really got to be digging deep to get into their country and find one. And like I said, I called one in turkey hunting. I guess I've called a couple in when I've been coyote hunting. And then a few years ago, I was checking traps in a snowstorm, and I was kneeling down taking a mink out of a trap in a small creek. And I kind of had that sixth sense that something was watching me, you know, kind of mm-hmm. like when you're misbehaving and you know your wife's home. I turned around and looked, and there was a bobcat on a downed tree on the other side of the creek, probably 20 feet away. And I had a brown Carhartt jacket on. I just figured I must have looked like a wounded deer. You know, it realized what I was. It went one way, and I thought, now that's cool. Have released quite a few that I've caught by accident. They're not that uncommon. They're just like you said, very secretive. Badgers, same way, mm-hmm. very very common, but just secretive. You just don't see them that often.
Yeah, I mean, it's you hear, you know, like our conversation tonight, and I've talked to numerous other people. It's like, oh yeah, we filled our tags, we didn't have any difficulty. And you know, people think the population isn't that big, but it actually is a lot bigger than you think, and there are farther south than what you would think as well.
Oh, they're in Milwaukee County. No doubt. I'm sure they go all the way to the Illinois-Iowa border. Just like fishers sure. now, are adapting to farm country, and we're hearing more and more about fishers south of Dane County, which in my book is that's pretty darn cool, you know, that it can adapt that fast. I know that they were always the deep forest, the deep dark forest was where I always thought a fisher habitat, and we're getting reports of them down south. So it's been pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, that is. That's awesome stuff. And I think that's some of the cool things about trapping. You know, I mean, it's a sport that's been around for like ever. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, bobcats, and you mentioned earlier, you had applied for the early season. And I'm guessing, or let me ask you this, do you know that like that northern tier of the state, is that the one that's more sought after, that second season?
Yeah.
And you know, longer to get a tag in that area.
Yes, second season is longer to get a tag, and it's also longer to get a tag in the northern part of the state. Kind of like, it doesn't exactly mirror bear hunting, but it's pretty similar in that. Okay. You know, the whole experience, you know, a bobcat, an average bobcat, I think if we weighed them and everybody set in their weight and they were honest about it, you'd find out that the average bobcat probably only weighs 20, 25 pounds. You know, you hear stories about 50 and 60 pounders. Quite honestly, I've skinned several hundred bobcats in my life, and I doubt I've crossed the 40-pound mark more than a couple times. Not saying they're not there, but people want to go up north. They want the experience, you know? Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, whether they're trapping, and there are several, I'll call them trapping guides that will trap with you to help you catch. You can actually pay them, and then of course the hound hunters, and then you've got several callers that will go out. You know, in our area here, Matt McHugh, I called him. It was getting close to the end of my season. I called Matt and said, "Hey, you got any bobcats in your back pocket?" And he said, "Yeah, let me know." And I'm assuming you know Matt, right?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Have you ever had him on? Because he's just a hoot to hunt with and hang with, and he actually took my position on the Fur Harvest Committee and for the state of Wisconsin when I left.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, I had him on, I probably want to say 5 or 6 years ago, and, you know, it's always nice to revisit with those guys that you have on. It's nice to see what they're up to and things that have changed, but, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'll have to dig out my list and see if we can get him back on, because I'm sure it would be a great compliment to our conversation that we're having tonight.
Oh yeah. And Matt grew up as a hound guy, you know, I think running coon and things like that. In fact, I think he might even still have a coon hound, but I'll tell you, as much as I've called coyotes, I'm not worthy of carrying his shorts when it comes to predator hunting. I've done a lot of skinning for him, but when you go out with him at midnight and it's dark and you're standing there and all of a sudden he lets loose with a coyote howl and it comes right out of his throat, you know, he's not using the call. It makes your hair stand up.
Oh my.
he is good.
Yeah. Yeah. He, when I had him on the show, he actually did some calling on the air, and you know, it's really cool as people who can, whether it's a turkey call or a duck call, a grunt call or something like that, when guys can do that with their own, you know, voice box, I mean, that's pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I are you familiar with Lance Penny?
The name, the person, not really, but the name I am.
He tells a funny story about a guy that can call turkeys with his voice, and they're in turkey camp, and Lance and I hunted turkeys together. In fact, he's done some guiding and things like that. And after dinner, they went out back, and it was in a state where you couldn't hunt after like 5 p.m. or whatever. They went out back, and this guy told everybody, "Well, we're going to make the turkeys gobble." So he made a crow noise, and the turkeys gobbled as they were going to roost, right? And the cook came out and saw everybody standing there with this guide. And Lance is telling the story. He says, the cook comes out and he goes, "Is he doing the turkey gobble thing?" And, you know, the people, they're all impressed, right? Well, the cook takes his pan and bangs it against the side of the house and the turkeys gobble.
That's funny. It's a, you know, they'll gobble at the darndest things, I'll tell you.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. All right, welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. And if you have any questions or comments, you want to chime in on tonight's conversation, it's 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. You can also reach out to me via email, and that is livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Instagram. It's Outdoors Living The. And tomorrow's Throwback Thursday, so I'll come up with some crazy cockamamie old-time picture that I have from the Druick hunting and fishing archives that go back to, like, when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth. But anyway, my guest tonight is Jim Binder, and we're kind of talking about trapping. And Jim, you know, obviously trapping is, you know, such a sport that has rich heritage in it. You know, why don't you share with the listeners a bit, you know, how you started doing this and how you developed it to where you are right now?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, the I Love Jim Binder portion of the show, is that where we're at?
Yeah, that's it. Yep. Perfect.
All right. So when I was a little kid, I was that little kid that turned over every rock and every stump to see what was underneath it. And if it was a worm, it went in my pocket. If it was a salamander, I played with it and let it go. That developed into, at the age of 12, I was recruited to help a grad student who was doing a redback bull study. Yeah. In Milwaukee County. So I got to go out and trap redback bulls. And it just took hold. I started trapping. In my lifetime, I've had several mentors. When I was trapping in the 70s and early 80s, everybody was, well, it was good money, but the majority of the trappers weren't sharing their knowledge. And, you know, it was a sort of a secretive thing where, you know, you saw maybe somebody walking with some traps when you were trapping, but, they weren't going to talk to you. And I was lucky in that I ran across, believe it or not, my first mentor was a World War I vet named Max Turner from Clintonville. And Max was in his 90s, and his wife was worried, and he was still putting on 6, 8, 10 miles a day on the trap line. So I got to go with him, and that's where I really got my start. And then along the way, other people, Mike Wilhite, I don't know if you know Mike. Mike is now the owner and editor of Trapper's Post. And Mike has been real instrumental in fine-tuning my skills, especially coyotes, which I can catch, you know, a dozen or 15 of them a year, but by no means can I lay in 30, 40, 60. But over the years, I have been lucky, and you know me, Mark, I'm so shy, I won't go up and talk to anybody. But I've been really lucky. Well, many years ago, my kids wanted to get involved in Trapper's Ed, and I kind of didn't like some of the messages I heard. And I've always felt that it was an honor and a privilege, and you had to treat the animal with respect. You're not just out there killing your enemy animal, you know, the skunk that's raiding your chicken coop. You're privileged to be able to do this. And so I complained to the Trappers Association, and they said, well, put up or shut up. So I started teaching. That was 18 years ago. I got more and more involved. I was holding 2-3 classes a year. The next thing you know, I got a call from the president. He said, would you consider being district director? And I said, sure. So I took over at that. 2 years later, they added wolf trapping to the state, and I became the wolf trapping coordinator and the district director. And then about 3-4 years ago, I got called by a couple people on the board of directors, and they said, hey, the state coordinator is retiring. We need somebody to take his spot. And I went to Sarah, my wife, and said, what do you think? And I'm involved in a lot of 501c3s. Shadows on the Wolf is the only one I'm still with. I'm on the board of directors for Shadows. I'm sure you're familiar with them.
Yes.
And I said, what do you think? And she said, why are you even asking me? This is what you were born for. So I went to the other entities that I was working with and said, hey, I'm going to take this position. it's volunteer, but I'm the statewide director, and I'm responsible for all of the classes, all of the teachers, all of the training. And, unfortunately, we had a really great year my first year, and we got all kinds of new teachers in and training, and then COVID hit. Now it's been 2 years since the COVID. This is my third, I'm going into my fourth year, actually. And we've had to jump through a lot of hoops. I've had to go down to Madison and testify because there's some politicians that were wondering why we're doing things the way we're doing. And I've had to toe the line. Obviously, the state of Wisconsin state government has certain rules for government employees. And although we're not government employees, we are sort of playing that, I don't want to call it a game, but you know what I mean. We're working with, as no different than Trapper's Ed or ATV safety or snowmobile safety. And as such, we had to do some things with our online classes and our correspondence classes, and our in-person classes were suspended for a year. Now, here's the good news. I've already held two classes this year. I've got one this weekend in Shiocton, which is jammed full, 35 people. And then I've got one coming up at Winnicottee High School. I've already taught at Fox Valley Tech. I can go on and on. I've got one coming up at my house in July. And my instructors are, I'm happy to say, I couldn't be prouder with the men and women that are doing this. They're all volunteers, and they can't wait to get people back in their classes because they're very passionate, dedicated crew of men and women that they're not the secret guy that I encountered in the 70s and the early 80s. They're like me. They're gregarious. They want to get out. They want to teach. They want this to not be a dying sport. And they realize that our Trapper's Ed is more of an ethics and a how to do it the right way so as to not lose this sport or vocation or hobby or whatever you want to call trapping. There it is. In a nutshell, I'd love to be able to take credit for it, but it's the men and women that work with me and teach these classes that are they're keeping it afloat. Let's put it that way. Mike Widener, the online and correspondence coordinator, has been, I'm going to say, 2,500, 3,000 students a year he's been working with, which is incredible, and he's 70.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If you go to the back page of the Trapping Regs, you'll see all these people I'm talking about and how to contact us. My name is back there too. So, let's talk for a minute about how to take class. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Perfect segue to go into that. So yeah, let's talk about that a bit.
Yeah. So you can take as the head of the program, I would say, getting your butt into a classroom where you physically get a chance to skin an animal or handle a trap or ask questions. And I have some of the best trappers in Wisconsin teaching with me and on their own. So that's obviously the best. It's between 12 and 16 hours of classes. But like if you come to my farm, you're going to get muddy and probably a little dirty when you're skinning, and you're going to get a little bored and a little hot, but you'll also be really excited. And, you can sign up, look for when the classes are by going on the Go Wild. There's an education tab. And don't click your county. You know, let's say you want to take Trapper's Ed. You scroll down, you click on Trapper's Ed. It'll say where. Click on statewide.
Okay.
It will show you all the classes. I just talked to a gentleman today from Door County that said there's no class. And I said, well, what about Marinette County? What about O'Connell County? What about Brown County? Fond du Lac County and Winnebago County. Those are all within driving distance, right? He said, well, yeah, but I was thinking Brown County. So if you just limit yourself to Brown County, that class may not be until August, and the instructor may not list it until July. So, go statewide. And of course, if you can't find a class that fits your needs, you can always take it online or take it as a correspondence, and then try to hook up with the trapper. The mentor program, and there is a mentor program in Wisconsin where you can work with a mentor for 2 years and then, get your trapping. It's like hunter safety. You have to take it in order to trap if you aren't grandfathered.
Okay. Mandatory type
so,
thing.
yeah, so you know, it's there's lots of ways of doing it, and there's lots of fine trappers out there. I always tell people, oh, one other thing, since I talked to you, me and my merry band of miscreants got together. Again, we dug deep, and we found a friend of mine from my law enforcement days that was an evidence tech and has a video company, and we put our classes on YouTube. So if you go to the Wisconsin Trappers Association YouTube page and watch our videos, there's a lot there that if you come to take the class or if you take it online or you take a correspondence course, if you watch that, I'm going to say there's 4 or 5 hours worth. There's 20 some of them. But like the population dynamics, Mark, I would tell you to watch that before you and I do one of the COVID because you'll laugh. I kind of make them. And then watch my ethics video, my wolf ethics video. I had to come up with a way of saying, you know, respect the animal, but yet it's a worthy pursuit. And I myself like wolves. Okay, now I've never lost a dog to wolves, and I've never lost livestock to wolves. And where my land is up north, I listen to the coyotes howl until a wolf howls, and then everything gets quiet. Sure. I do like wolves, but I definitely see them as just the pinnacle of my trapping career. I have caught wolves and I've released them, but I've never caught one when I've had a tag where I could actually harvest the animal.
Okay.
I did just get skinning a bunch of them for the state of Wisconsin, but they're not mine.
Right.
So.
Right.
Anyway.
Very interesting. Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. All right. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druitt. Thanks for tuning us in. If you want to join in, you got any questions or comments, 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We're talking trapping tonight with a good friend and multiple guest appearances here on Living the Outdoors, Jim Binder. And Jim, you know, we kind of left off talking about, you know, trapping and trapping wolves and so on and so forth. I know that's been a controversial situation, but is that something you still have on your to-do list?
Yes, absolutely. I have not applied for a harvest permit yet, and but I have helped people harvest. I have handled wolves for people. I handled wolves for the state and the Department of Ag, that kind of thing. The trouble wolves end up going into fur kits and things like that.
Sure.
But I definitely want to someday harvest a wolf. And it's, for me, it's a once in a lifetime thing. It's kind of like I want to harvest a moose too. That's on my list. I can't wait for that, but you know what I mean? A bucket list kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think all of us outdoor people have those things that we have dreamt about since we were little kids and, you know, grown up with. It's like, you know, you get to that point in your life where, you know, maybe you have the ability to do that, you have the finances to do that, and I think that's the key, at least it is for me, is to, you know, get, not just talk about doing those things, but, you know, work hard enough, put it on the list of priorities, and get it done. Because when that time comes and we're not able to do that anymore, I for one don't want to be sitting back in a chair saying, you know, I wish I would have done this, I wish I would have done that. Just, you know, instead of the 10 reasons to not do something, just figure out that one, pick that one reason to get out there and get it done.
Well, and remember at the start of the program tonight, I told you about how many times I was in the hospital getting surgeries and things this year, and my shoulder hasn't really turned out well. But, you know, I can still skin, I can still trap, and that's very, very important to me. I can still take care of my bees, and I can still turkey hunt and bear hunt and things like that. Now, the day is coming where I'm going to have to buy a skinning machine. But like you said, instead of making excuses why I can't, Mm-hmm. I just find ways of saying I can. You know, the old bull and the young bull, and walk down and open the gate, that kind of thing. I work smarter, not harder now. I still skin as much. In fact, I find myself skinning faster, but I don't do the bull work that I used to. I finesse things now.
That is the key to longevity. Do it. You know, you don't have to be in a hurry to do that. And you know, as you progress in age, you figure that out. It's like, I can still, you know, do the things that I want to do. Maybe it'll take me a little bit more time. Maybe I need to take more time. Maybe I need to be more careful about where I step. And, you know, you're paying more attention to things. Whereas when you're younger, you didn't really worry about tripping and falling. You get right back up. Now you trip and fall and you're like, okay, well, here's another trip to the ER.
Yep. I had a trigger finger, Mark. I don't know if you've ever had one, but I had the shot. I had the shot. And, oh my goodness. You know, as they say on the 40-year-old virgin, Kelly Clarkson, remember when they tore the hair off his chest? There's my movie, my movie reference tonight. Anyway, I think it was Kelly Clarkson that yelled, right?
Yep.
Anyway, when they finally got that finger fixed, the surgeon kind of, I don't want to say he yelled at me, good man, Boyd Lumsden. And he said, you know, I said, okay, well, I'm going to get back to skinning now. And he said, hey, you just had your finger operated on. It's only been 5 days. Settle down. And I mean, he was very nice about it, but his point was taken. I couldn't wait to, you know, I didn't trap at all last year because I had to have my shoulder rebuilt. I had to have my bicep reconnected and rotator cuff and all that stuff. And I couldn't wait. And I had a whole bunch of animals in the freezer waiting for me as soon as this trigger finger had healed. Well, you know, I'm not 40 anymore. I'm closer to 60, you know?
Yep. Yeah. Those realizations become more and more evident as time progresses, but you know, you just do it maybe in a little bit more moderation, but you know, I'm going to keep hitting the duck blind and hitting the grouse woods and sitting in the field, hunting geese, whatever it takes. I'll keep doing it. My wife, I might get to that point where I need a four-wheel drive wheelchair, but if that's the case, then so be it. I'll start saving my money now.
All right, Mark, here's your quote. You're going to endeavor to persevere.
Outlaw Josie Wales.
Yeah, or was it persevere to endeavor?
Yeah, that's it. That's it, my friend. But you know what? In trapping is, you know, do you think, Jim, that is it more difficult to get people involved in the sport? Do you see more people wanting to it? Do you see more women getting involved? How do you see the evolution of trapping as things move forward?
Yeah, okay. So I have a group of women instructors, Jenna Kuznicki, Sky Good, Bridget Bazil, Jody Hammerlaw, Anna Schneider got together, got some backing from the Future Trappers of America and the Fur Harvesters, and then I got some funding for them. And they held the first ever all women's camp ever held that we know of in the U.S. And it's on the Fur Takers. It's on the cover of their magazine this year. And it's amazing the transformation from when I started. I mean, this is my 18th year is teaching Trapper's Ed and being involved in the program. The I'll call it metamorphosis, you know. So it used to be that just us grubby outdoors guys were trappers, right? You know, as they say up in Marion, us guys. And now there's a certain segment of the foraging crowd, you know, the oats and goats crowd, the renewable resource crowd that is out there because, you know what, beaver's good to eat and the fur lasts two generations and it's a renewable resource. And quite honestly, environmentally, it's more friendly than wearing a nylon hat. You know, that beaver can regenerate and repopulate. When you make a mine to get the minerals and you make a factory to produce the products and the rubber to transport it, et cetera, and so on, each one of that leaves a buddy footprint on this earth, whereas taking one beaver to consume and wear its fur, the 20-somethings realize that. And you know, we've all seen the resurgence of, like, the mushroom hunters or the people that are eating pheasant back shell fungus. Or I found a lion's mane this fall, which was the shell fungus that I had never found before, but I knew it was good. I looked it up, and sure enough, it was very edible. Or the people that are eating crayfish or we eat our bobcat. We love bobcat meat, and we love beaver meat. And, that is getting a new look. The same crowd, you know, the 20-somethings 20 years ago were hunting is bad and you're killing animals. The 20-somethings now are going renewable resource, cleaner and environmentally more friendly, and it's definitely greener than a lot of the other things. You know, giddy up. So I'm getting a lot of sort of college age students that want to make their own fur, that want to catch their own meals, that are, you know, if you talk about the recruitment, retention, and reactivation, the three R's, if you talk to anybody from the DNR, that's the big thing. And we're starting to see kind of an upswing. Now, it would be nice if the fur was worth something, but I don't trap for the money. I still trap this year, and everything got canned and made into hats and garments and gloves and donated. I donate a lot of my fur, goes into the teaching kits. That's a different, like, Winnicott is gotten a lot of my fur, Fox Valley Tech. New London High School has a great fur collection. Clintonville's gotten a little bit. And that's why I trap. I figure the more fur I get out into the public and into people's houses and on their heads and hands, the more secure my chosen sport, which is, by the way, the most regulated outdoor activity in North America, is trapping. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I did not. That is a good thing to know. Good point.
Yeah. So the more of it we can get out there, the more people that are positive about it. So to answer your question, I know I jumped up on my soapbox there, but to answer your question, yes, women, absolutely. And there's a big trend going that way. And I'm not going to say that we've got the big longliners, you know, the last of the longliners. There's not so much of that anymore. There are still a few. If you go on the internet, you'll see a guy named Dewey Wayne Waddell. He's got a 70-mile line. When I was younger, I had a 70-mile line. But more of them are just doing that little sort of neighborhood, trapping their farm, the neighbor's farm, or wherever they get permission and things like that. So, yeah, it's still active, and I'm glad to see that, because I don't want to see trapping go away.
Right, exactly. And, you know, do you think people are starting to understand, outside of the fact that it's a renewable resource and people are coming around from that perspective, do you think they're understanding a little bit more of the environmental, you know, impact that this could have if people didn't trap?
Well, I try to explain that, and I tell a story. And if you watch my population dynamics video, which is kind of fun, like I said, if you explain to them, and my wife and I were talking about this on Sunday, you know, taking one beaver out of a colony doesn't do that one beaver any favors, okay? Just like taking one raccoon off of a 40-acre patch of woods doesn't do that one raccoon any favors. But what it does is it does favors for the other 18 that are still there. It gives them, you know, a little more food each, a little more space each, a little more shelter, like transmission of disease is less when you start doing that. And, you know, you can talk about carrying capacity versus harvestable surplus. You know, only so many raccoons can live year-round on the same piece of land. And they're going to keep having babies. And unless something controls them, whether it's disease or migration or predation or Jim Binder and his trapping, something's got to happen to get it back down to the carrying capacity. And as long as I only take the amount above the carrying capacity, which is called harvestable surplus, okay, and we keep that breeding population, the carrying capacity, then what we're doing is we are actually doing what nature intended to do before we took all the apex predators away.
Right.
You know, exactly. So I do explain that to people. Everybody in this world, I don't care if you're a vegan or vegetarian or a straight up meat eater, we all have bloody footprints. You can't exist in this world without impacting wildlife. And it's just right. how you do it and how you look at it. You know, the rubber that goes into your tires came from a plantation in South America that used to be habitat for wild animals. And the factory that made it was on land that used to be habitat. So no matter what you do, you have bloody footprints. It's just...
Yeah, no, agreed. No matter how far you try to distance yourself from that, you've touched it somehow.
Yes, exactly. And so... I think I see my job as being a good steward. I you know, my farm is set up for wildlife. And I noticed the other day that I had a pair of otters that was working the creek going through my farm. And my wife said, you can trap them. And I said, not unless there's a need to, because I like otters. I've got pictures of them. I put cameras out and captured some really cool pictures of them. But first of all, there's no value. And second of all, nobody needs an otter in their fur collection right now. So there's really no reason to me. So instead, I have provided them a place to live, a space that stream creek wasn't there until I cut the drainage in and put the ponds in. So I guess that's what I'm getting at. That's what makes me a steward.
Yeah, perfect. All right, on that note, we are going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up here on Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show, right on the score. All right, welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. I've got Jim Binder here joining me tonight. We've been talking about trapping. And, you know, when you talk about trapping, Jim, how many species here are out there that people can trap?
All right. I'll list them and you count them, okay?
Okay. There's all right.
Two species of weasel, mink, fisher, otter, skunk, muskrat, beaver, possum, raccoon, red fox, gray fox, coyote, wolf technically, although it's on hold right now, bobcat. I think that's it. What do you got?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
15. There you go. And yeah. I'll bet you I've got all of them hanging in my shed right now.
That wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Well, I've been working on fur kits for the instructors. And then a lot of my students, and I mean, I was looking at this. I think I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,000 or 3,500 students that I've taught over 17 years, three to seven classes a year, and about 35 students per class. I haven't done the math lately, but you know, they'll call me up and say, "Hey, I caught my first insert here otter the other day. One of my students brought over an otter, and of course." I've got all the facilities to handle it, and you know me, I'm so shy and quiet anyway. We work on it in the shop, and then usually they end up leaving it here. And then when I take my stuff in to get tanned, I usually bring it in for them. So, 2/3 of what I have out there is not mine. In fact, very little of what's out there is mine, but, it's kind of fun because, neighbors and other trappers stop by to have a soda. I've always got soda in the fridge, so they'll come by and steal a soda. And see what's hanging on the wall. And one guy brought his granddaughter on Sunday, and she just went through everything, which I was happy to see a seven-year-old young lady that couldn't wait to put her hands on a wolf skin that I was working on just marvel at all the different stuff. And I had a couple of skulls that I'd cleaned up. I sent home with her just because I hope to promote that spark, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's a whole part of it when you can actually talk to somebody and get your hands on some of these critters. And it's amazing, you know, what they look like and what they feel like are so completely different. You know, I mean, the textures and the, in the fur and you know, the what they look like. I think it's really a cool sport to be involved in.
It is, and I find myself getting lost, immersed when I'm working on animals and hides and trapping. I just, the time, kind of like when we do these shows, I say the same thing, you know, when it gets to this part time of the show. Where did the time go? And it's because you're having fun, you're doing what you like, and you're immersed in it, you know?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And it's a, you know, it's a kind of a labor-intensive sport. I mean, you really have to be committed to doing it. But the rewards are there, not unlike any other sport. You know, if you want to, you know, be successful at it, you got to put your time in. You've got to, you know, do your research and all of those things. Get lined up with some people such as yourself that understand what needs to be done and how it needs to be done, and you just increase your chances of being successful. And as we all know, Wisconsin is such a huge, you know, huge area of opportunity to get out and involve the outdoors, and trapping is a pretty important part of that as well. But, you know, thanks so much to guys like you who take the time to educate people and so on. And Jim, like you said, you know, where did the time go? And you know, I appreciate you taking the time. It's always great to talk with you. I know it's been a while, but it's one of my most enjoyable conversations because you got a great sense of humor and you're passionate about what you do. So thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Hey, Mark, one last thing. End of July, I'm having a class out here. One of these years, you're going to find yourself with some time to take Trapper Zeb.
Yes, without a doubt. It's on the list, my friend. That's for sure. It's on the list because I do want to. It's something that I think I could put my mind to and have some fun with it.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I enjoyed this. It went fast. Thank you. And anytime you want me, just give me a call.
I appreciate that, Jim. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to join us here on Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show. Great to be sitting in this chair sharing my passion for living the outdoors. And remember, if you have the opportunity to get somebody involved in the outdoors, take advantage of it. It will make you a better person. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors.